Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th Canto, Chapter 22. Prithu Maharaja's meeting with the Kumaras, Text 28. Atmanam Indriyatam Cha Parang Yad Ubhayor Api Satyashaya Upadau Vai Puman Pashyati Nanyada Atmanang Indriyatam Cha Parang Yad Ubhayor Api Satyashaya Upadau Vai Puman Pashyati Nanyada Atmanam Indriyatam Cha Parang Yad Ubhayor Api Satyashaya Upadau Vai Puman Pashyati Nanyada Vaishnavis. Atmanam, the soul. Indriyatam, for sense gratification. Cha, and. Param, transcendental. Yat, that. Ubhayo, both. Api, certainly. Sati, being situated. Ashaye, material desires. Upadho, designation. Vai, certainly. Puman, the person. Pashyati, sees. Na anyada, not otherwise. Translation. When the soul exists for sense gratification, he creates different desires. And for that reason, he becomes subjected to designations. But when one is in the transcendental position, he is no longer interested in anything except fulfilling the desires of the Lord. Purport. Being covered by material desires, a spirit soul is also considered to be covered by designations belonging to a particular type of body. Thus, he considers himself an animal, man, demigod, bird, beast, and so forth. In so many ways, he's influenced by false identification, caused by false egotism, and being covered by illusory material desires, he distinguishes between matter and spirit. When one is devoid of such distinctions, there is no longer a difference between matter and spirit. At that time, the spirit is the only predominating factor. As long as one is covered by material desires, he thinks himself the master or the enjoyer. Thus, he acts for sense gratification and becomes subjected to material pangs, happiness, and distress. But when one is freed from such a concept of life, he is no longer subjected to designations, and he envisions everything as spiritual in connection with the Supreme Lord. This is explained by Srila Rupa Goswami in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Anasaktasya vishayan yataham upayunjataha nirbandha krishna sambandhe yuktam vairagyam uchyate. The liberated person has no attachment for anything material or for sense gratification. He understands that everything is connected with the Supreme Personality of Godhead and that everything should be engaged in the service of the Lord. Therefore, he does not give up anything. There is no question of renouncing anything because the Paramahansa knows how to engage everything in the service of the Lord. Originally, everything is spiritual. Nothing is material. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, also it is explained that a Mahabhagwat, a highly advanced devotee, has no material vision. Stavra jangama deke na deke tarmurti savachahoy nij ishta deva spurti. Although he sees trees, mountains, and other living entities moving here and there, he sees all as the creation of the Supreme Lord, and with reference to the context, sees only the creator, not the created. In other words, he no longer distinguishes between the created and the creator. He sees only the Supreme Personality of Godhead in everything. He sees Krishna in everything, and everything in Krishna. This is oneness. Translation again. When the soul exists for sense gratification, he creates different desires, and for that reason, he becomes subjected to designations. But when one is in the transcendental position, he is no longer interested in anything except fulfilling the desires of the Lord. Om agena chirmanandasya gyananjana shalakaya shakshun meditam yena tasmai shri guruve namaha jai shri krishna chaitanya prabhunitananda si advaita gadadhara sivasadi gaur bhaktavrinda hare krishna hare krishna Krishna, Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Here in this wonderful purport, you see Srila Prabhupada in his consummate mastery playing all the keys on the piano. He's dealing with the depths of conditioned existence and the heights of Krishna consciousness, the vision of the topmost devotee, the Mahabhagwat. It's all going on in the same purport. We can always maintain our gratitude to Srila Prabhupada for teaching us in such an ingenious way. In the same purport, you're reading about the heights of bhakti, and also in the same purport, the information how to get out of the depths of conditioned life is there. It's all going on at once. The whole show is all going on at the same time. Therefore, I like to remember how Srila Prabhupada said his books are like a pharmacy, an apothec, and they're medicines for all types of persons, from beginners to the most advanced. So that you can certainly see in this purport. And we shouldn't become lulled into complacency or familiarity by the apparent simple language. Simple language doesn't always mean simple thoughts. In fact, it is a sign of the greatest genius that such a person can convey the most deep and profound subject matter in simple language. That is the sign of the greatest teacher. We're reading about how the soul generates its reality due to its existential situation. If you are existing with pure desires, simply to fulfill the desires of the Lord, you generate one situation for yourself. But if you are existing with desires to be the enjoyer, to be the master, you generate another reality for yourself. So in that sense, yes, you are the master of your fate. But once your desire mechanism goes this way or that way, reality also goes this way and that way, and it's all under the control of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In this way, we have limited, minute independence. Why do we like staying in the material world? We like material designations. We like having a material body. That's the nature of our illusion. Lord Kapiladev comments on this phenomenon in the third canto of Bhagavatam. Janturvai bhava etasmin yam yam yonam anuvraje. Lord Kapiladev says, it's so amazing that no matter what kind of body the conditioned soul takes, no matter how degraded that body is, the conditioned soul feels right at home with that body. Feels completely comfortable. Everything is all right. This is the nature of the deluding energy. We have to put the blame squarely on our own lap. We like to be in Maya. We like material attachment. We like having a material body. This is the sad truth. Yes, it is true that Maya is so powerful that our original spiritual instincts are covered. We're in Maya because of misdirected desires, and the sad fact is we like being in Maya. I'm remembering as Holiness Giriraj Maharaj's memoirs, in which he's describing how he and other devotees were walking with Prabhupada on the beach in Mumbai. And Prabhupada suddenly turned to them all and said, why are you all so attached to sex desire? And the devotees were kind of taken aback and he began to, what's the right answer to this one? it's a long pause, like, and no one quite, wanted to venture an answer. And Prabhupada spoke up for them. You're attached to sex desire because you like it. And it's quite shocking to deeply consider these statements. We can just dismiss them as, well, these are fiery evangelical Hare Krishna outpourings. The type that were made during the early days of the Krishna conscious movement before things matured and settled down a bit. Now let's take the statement head on. We're attached to material desires because we like it. It's very challenging to consider in that way. You have to actually throw yourself up against the wall and check yourself out. I like it. Yes. Because we like it, therefore, we become covered by so many different designations, and We go from body to body in pursuit of our fondness for material desires. Therefore, we require constant education and constant transformation. How to separate ourselves from this fondness for material desires we've had since time immemorial. Anadi karma pale, abhibhavana vajjala. You can't trace out the beginning. But we can seriously take up the process how to separate ourselves from our beloved material desires. That takes knowledge. That takes commitment. But it is possible. We're going to find out from Prithu Maharaj's meeting with the Kumaras that just like when you look at yourself in various different substances, what you see becomes distorted in various ways. If you look at yourself in water, your reflection appears to be moving, so you identify with that. If you look at yourself on a piece of ice, your reflection seems to be very fixed, so you consider yourself in that way. According to whatever substance you view yourself, you see a certain reality, and then you identify with that. Similarly, the spirit soul, seeing itself as a product of material nature, considers itself in various ways according to the movements of material nature. And this is a great tragedy, because material nature has nothing good in store for us. Yet we trust material nature so much. We admit that there are some problems. There will always be political, economic problems. There will always be bodily problems. But if we look in our hearts, we see there's some basic fondness for material nature. There's some basic liking of the situation in such a way that we don't want to completely turn our backs on it. Therefore, we spend a lot of time and many years in devotional service trying to eke out a compromise with Krishna. Some Krishna consciousness and some Maya consciousness. Let's make a deal. In this way, Lord Chaitanya's movement can go on. Now, certainly, we all are making gradual progress going back home, back to Godhead. Although our path is gradual, still we must, at every step, consider what is the reality. That is the point. We cannot use our gradual ascent as an excuse why not to daily consider what actually is going on. What is actually going on is that we have generated an artificial existence for ourselves, a dream-like existence in which it seems that having material desires is normal. It's not so bad. It's actually kind of comfortable. We've generated this artificial reality for ourselves. And then we become attached to that very artificial reality that we've generated for ourselves. In this way, conditioned life goes on, body after body. When we hear about Lord Chaitanya, we see that his context was different. There's a very important concept raised here that in reference to the Mahabhagavat, although he sees trees, mountains, and other living entities moving here and there, he sees all as the creation of the Supreme Lord, and with reference to the context, sees only the Creator and not the created. So what is that context? You generate your context according to your status as a conditioned soul or as a devotee who simply desires the pleasure of the Lord. You can recall in the third canto, Uddhava's response to questions by Vidura about Krishna. Vidura had requested him, please chant the glories of that person whose qualities are sung in every place of pilgrimage. So Uddhava's response was he became completely silent He became stunned. He wasn't able to speak. He was overwhelmed by the anxiety of excessive remembrance of Krishna. In fact, he, just by the questions of Vidura, Uddhava, his consciousness journeyed to the spiritual world, particularly to Krishna Loka, to Dwarka Dham. And although he was visible in the material world, he was actually somewhere else. The Bhagavatam describes that Uddhava felt like someone who had been awakened from a deep slumber. That awakening was provoked by the questions of Vidura. Now, this doesn't mean that Uddhava had forgotten Krishna and suddenly he remembered Krishna. What's going on is that the nature of his ecstatic Krishna consciousness was such that even though he was always thinking of Krishna, when someone provoked him further, he reacted like, oh, I've forgotten Krishna, I've been sleeping, and now you have awakened me, and now I can remember Krishna. In other words, the Krishna conscious reality is dynamic. It's ever increasing. So that even though Uddhava was always in remembrance of Krishna, things were going deeper and deeper and deeper as prompted by the questions of Vidura. Finally, Uddhava came to be able to address the questions of Vidura. In this way, Uddhava is showing what happens when the bhakti lata, the creeper of devotion, penetrates the material coverings and comes to rest at the lotus feet of Krishna, and then the fruits of love of God descend to be tasted. It's not an ordinary thing for something that apparently is generated from within the material world can pierce the coverings of the universe. You know how thick these coverings are. They're so thick that the hollow of the universe seems quite small in comparison to the coverings. What is it that can pierce those coverings? It is not anything material. It is the bhakti lata, the creeper of devotion. That creeper of devotion is what we are trying to grow here and what we are trying to protect here. And indeed, that creeper of devotion can penetrate the coverings of the universe and come to rest at Krishna's lotus feet. And so Uddhava is demonstrating what happens when the fruits of that creeper fall down and can be tasted. He goes into being stunned just by hearing questions about Krishna. His context had become stimulated. His context was such that he was always thinking of Krishna, and that in that context of always thinking of Krishna, questions about Krishna stimulated that context, and he felt like, oh, I'm waking up from a deep sleep. I've forgotten Krishna. Now I can remember Krishna. He couldn't even speak. He was stunned in ecstasy. This principle of context is most dramatically shown in Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who, even upon seeing a sand dune, would immediately think of Govardhan Hill and start running at the speed of mind towards the sand dune. Or just by seeing a garden in Jagannath Puri, he would remember Vrindavan. Just by seeing a body of water, he would remember the Jamuna River and jump in. In other words, because of the consciousness of the person, the context is different. It is the nature of materialists to assume that everyone's context is the same. Therefore, they can't understand what is so special about bhakti. Especially here in Southern California. Everyone will be very tolerant of whatever trip you have. Yeah, I'm into scuba diving. You're into bhakti. I'm into Buddhism. Yeah, skiing's my thing. Yeah, whatever. Just have a belief. Be passionate about something. That is the point. All the counselors of life instruct you. You've got to have something you're passionate about. And then whatever it is, that's fine. It doesn't matter what it is. But just have something that you get off on. So they consider, in this way, that all the contexts are the same. It's not possible for a materialist to understand that a devotional attitude, a bhakti attitude, generates a different context. So just see what Lord Chaitanya is showing. How, not simply by hearing questions about Krishna, although he demonstrates that, certainly, at night in Jagannath Puri, his moods became so pronounced in separation from Krishna, and Ramananda Roy and Swoop Damodar would recite appropriate verses and sing appropriate songs to augment the Lord's feelings of separation. It was not simply that, though. It was not simply when Lord Chaitanya would go to the temple of Jagannath Puri and see Lord Jagannath that his topmost bhava would be revealed. Even in seeing a sand dune or a garden, even just seeing a body of water, he would immediately remember Krishna. He would see Krishna. In this way, Lord Chaitanya is demonstrating the heights of love of Krishna. Not that he was understood all the time. Once he was at home in Navadvip, and he was, as he sat at home, he became overwhelmed by the gopis' feelings of separation. And he began to chant, "Gopi, gopi, gopi, gopi." And he was a famous professor, Nimai Pandit, so one student decided to drop by to visit the famous pundit. And the student, to his amazement, saw Nimai Pandit chanting "Gopi, gopi." And the student felt motivated. "Let me make some correction here." He said, "Why? Seeing how Krishna's name is so glorious and brings about piety, you are chanting Gopi Gopi." In this way, the student sought to correct Lord Chaitanya, but all he did was show his ignorance. First of all, he couldn't understand Lord Chaitanya's bhava. And secondly, he dared to say that the result of chanting Hare Krishna is pious activity, pious results, fruitive results. So, what was Lord Chaitanya's response? Lord Chaitanya, his context is such that everything he takes in terms of the gopis' feelings of separation from Krishna, that is the depth of his context. He preached externally, and internally, he was always in the mood of the gopis and their separation from Krishna. As we spoke before, this is inconceivable, and the point can only be understood by accepting that Supreme Personality of Godhead is achincha, inconceivable. How he can be Krishna himself and yet pine away in feelings of separation from himself. There's no logical understanding of this. And Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami assures you, you can only understand this by the mercy of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, by the parampara. Otherwise, you can't understand these contradictions. So, because Lord Chaitanya was in that mood of separation from Krishna, when he heard this student espousing the cause of Krishna, Lord Chaitanya reacted very strongly. Talking about Krishna, we don't want to hear about him. Because the particular height of the bhava Lord Chaitanya is demonstrating is that of when Uddhava visited Vrindavan and saw Krishna's intimate devotees there in such intense love and separation that they're even criticizing Krishna. They said they didn't want to hear about it. Why should we hear about Krishna? He's done this and that. We don't want to talk about Krishna anymore. Why should anyone mention his name? This way they went on and on and on. Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. So Uddhava's noticing, the more they say they are not going to talk about Krishna, the more they talk about Krishna. The more they accuse Krishna, the more their attachment for Krishna becomes pronounced. So this particular mood, especially as demonstrated by Srimati Radharani, is what Lord Chaitanya came to taste. So he was in that mood, and the student began to espouse the cause of Krishna. You should chant Krishna's name. Even the student had it wrongly. Chant it because it gives pious results, fruit of activity. Anyway, Lord Chaitanya just heard him espousing the cause of Krishna and immediately took up a stick and and the student had to flee. And then the devotees of Lord Chaitanya came and calmed him down. And meanwhile, what did the student do? He went to the student enclave where there were 1,000 students, and he told them what this Nimai Pandit had done. This Nimai Pandit dared to chase a brahmana, a caste brahmana, with a stick. He's become so puffed up. He's become so proud. He was at home chanting the name Gopi Gopi, neglecting the process of genuine punya, pious activity. And when I tried to correct him, he tried to strike me. So all the 1,000 students became fired up. They were, we got to do something. This Nimai Pandit is destroying religious principles. He's plunging the whole country into illusion. So they became very agitated. So what was Lord Chaitanya doing? He was once again sitting at home in Navadvip, and he was contemplating their situation. You see, you can't just pry apart Lord Chaitanya's internal moods from his external moods and say the external is inferior and the internal superior. No. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, you see how these moods are connected, how one flows into the other. So Lord Chaitanya first was at home manifesting the gopi bhava, the feelings of the gopis in separation from Krishna. Now he's at home and he's contemplating these poor, deluded, blasphemous students. This is not contradictory, nor are they like there's some huge cleavage between these two moods. It was right here, for example, in Los Angeles, where there was a bit of a controversy. The Sankirtan devotees were being told that they were, in some way connected to that prayer we sing every morning. Nikunjayuna Ratikere Sihaya Yayali Biya Yukti Apekshniya. That just as a spiritual master, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur sings, is assisting in making arrangements for the intimate devotees of the Lord to meet with him in the kunja, in the groves of Vrindavan. So similarly, the Sankirtan devotees, they are, by their distributing books and by their connecting, seeking to connect the conditioned souls of Krishna, they're in some way related to that. So there was a big controversy, and you know, other devotees were objecting. Oh, this is just too much. You know, this Sankirtan talk, it just really gets carried away sometimes. over the top. So the controversy reached Srila Prabhupada. And he stunned everybody by responding, yes, this is true. In other words, Srila Prabhupada, with his topmost Mahabhagavat vision, saw how everything fit together, how everything was connected, how the internal is connected to the external, and that you see in this purport, in which he's playing all the keys of the piano from the top to the bottom at the same time. In this way, he's giving his disciples, his followers, such an unparalleled experience. So, yes, Prabhupada said it's true that this preaching is that, this connecting of the conditioned souls to Krishna, this is related to the tasteful arrangements going on in the most confidential section of the spiritual world, where various associates of Krishna are always making arrangements so other associates can be with Krishna. This is the context that Srila Prabhupada demonstrated. And so don't think that there's some big cleavage between, shall we say, 1 minute Lord Chaitanya is absorbed in feeling like the gopis when Uddhava visited Vrindavan, viewing Krishna in a reproaching way. And the next minute, Lord Chaitanya is contemplating the plight of the conditioned souls. He's thinking, Kaviraj Goswami reveals, what's going on? I've come to deliver people. And now these very people I've come to deliver, they're blaspheming me. They're criticizing me. What to do? Something has to be done. Lord Chaitanya is showing you the emotions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in terms of care for the parts and parcels. He's Krishna as his devotee, showing the deepest concern for all living entities. Even though they're blaspheming him, they're criticizing him unjustly, he's sitting at home deliberating. So he comes to the conclusion, I should take sannyas. Because if I take sannyas, as you know, they'll pay their obeisances. And by paying their obeisances, the offenses will be nullified. And then, for step two, I can give my grace and they'll engage in devotional service. But the first step is the nullification of the offenses. That will happen when they bow down, thinking of me just an ordinary sannyas. So they're not thinking I'm the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They'll bow down. And in that way, their offenses, their blasphemy will be counteracted. And then I'll give them my grace, and they'll be bhakti yogis. So that was Lord Chaitanya's plan. Therefore, as you know, while he was sitting at home, Keshava Bharati came to Navadvip, and he visited Lord Chaitanya's home, because it was a custom of sannyasis to want to go to the house of brahmanas to get prasad. And so, when Lord Chaitanya saw him, he said, Sakshad Narayan, you're directly Narayan. Please, rescue me from the ocean of material illusion. Now, is Lord Chaitanya showing some kind of tendency to Mayavad philosophy? Because the Mayavadi sannyasis think that they are Narayan. So why is Lord Chaitanya saying to Keshava Bharati, Sakshat Narayan, you are directly Narayan, please save me. Well, that you heard about in yesterday's purport, how a liberated person understands he is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, acting in accordance with the desire of the Supreme Lord, and as such, there's no distinction between himself and the Supreme Lord, although both of them retain their individuality, nityo nityanam, chaitanas chaitananam. This is the perfect conception of oneness in relation to the supersoul and the soul. So you see, Lord Chaitanya's context is completely different, even when he's saying to Keshava Bharati, Sakshad Narayan, you're directly Narayan. Then what does Keshava Bharati reply? No, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the supersoul. I must do whatever you say. I have no independence. He has minute independence, of course, but he's saying, whatever your desire is, that is my desire. As we read today, Puman Pashyati Nanyada. The person sees nothing else except fulfilling the desires of the Lord. So Keshava Bharati presented himself in that way. There's nothing to me other than fulfilling your desire. All right, you want to take sannyas? Okay. So he went back to his place, and then, as you know, Lord Chaitanya went there and indeed took sannyas. So, in this way, we can see all these different levels and different contexts, all caused by the desires of the soul. The desires of the soul can generate a material context of illusion. The desires of the soul can generate a spiritual context that becomes so intense that everywhere you look, you simply think of Krishna. As Prabhupada writes here, he no longer distinguishes between the created and the creator. Because anytime you see the energy, you immediately remember the energetic source. So everything just becomes stimulation for increased remembrance of Krishna. This is a very deep subject matter. We can go on and on, but we have our tight schedule today because of the meetings. So we'll stop here, and if maybe there are one or two questions or comments. We have so many senior Vaishnavas here. I don't know which students were which. I like the way Prabhupada tells it, that the students objected to Lord Chaitanya's chanting Gopi Gopi. And so even though he was there, he was a teacher, he was Nimai Pandit, Prabhupada said, he closed the school down. What they're using this school, closing it down. They don't understand. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.
Therefore,